that she
expressed
herself.
Expressed opinion, and she excused herself from that.
Okay.
From ourselves that it starts at 9. Otherwise, on Tuesdays, we accommodate members who fly in the morning. So we start at 9:30, and that is why we have decided to delay starting the meeting. But let me apologize to those who arrived for a meeting that is supposed to have started at 9. And I think now it's 9:30, and therefore we can start. We will go straight to the bill, and I will want to mention the fact that we have made some amendments and have requested. And have requested our legal people to put down those amendments, but we have not gone through the amendments to check as to whether they are indeed what we want them to put as our own views or amendments in the bill. So for now, whatever copies that might be circulated as per our discussions, they may not reflect what the committee wants, because the committee has not pronounced itself on what is saying. We think that we've got to go through the bill, and after that go back to some contentious issues, and those issues that we decided to flag, so that we can then go back to them and decide. And we have been writing down all those issues, so we are aware of them. We will again today proceed with the bill, with the secretariat, the legal minds that are here leading leading presentations, and members will make their inputs into the bill. And when we are done with the whole bill, then we might probably look at those issues that we left, in fact, we flagged. I know for a fact that we still have to answer the question on where should this be located. That is what Honorable Ridovo said. We will look into that and then, of course, go through the bill to check as to whether what we have suggested is exactly what our legal people have put into the bill, but also to check as to whether those amendments that we've made are in terms of the Constitution in line with the existing legislation, or they actually might call for amendments in other legislations that already are in existence. We will therefore proceed to 17J, Section 17J, and we'll allow the Secretary to take us through. I want to believe that we have really tried to delay so as to accommodate anybody who might be late, because we said we're going to start at 9. Over to you, Secretary.
J17J deals with the operational committee of the DPCI, and what we are suggesting here is an amendment to Section 1A, basically with the following paragraph. 1A1, instead of the National Commissioner as the chairperson, it's the head of the directorate as the chairperson. So that the National Commissioner will not chair the Operations Committee, the head of the directorate will chair the Operations Committee, and the deputy head of the directorate as deputy chairperson. Previously, the Act read that the National Commission will be the chairperson and the head of the directorate as the deputy chairperson. We now want to change that with the head of the directorate as the chairperson and the deputy head of the directorate as the deputy chairperson. That is in order to give the directorate greater control over the functioning of the Operation Committee. And then by the insertion in section 1A of the following subparagraph, after 1A small 2, which is 2A, a Deputy National Commissioner of the South African Police Service, delegated by the National Commissioner, the head of Crime Intelligence Division of the South African Police Service. So what we're essentially amending here is that the chair will be the head of the directorate, the deputy chair will be the deputy head, and in addition to those officials, the National Commissioner must delegate a Deputy National Commissioner to serve on that committee, as well as the head of the Crime Intelligence of the South African Police Service on that committee. Do you want me to go through the whole of J.J.? So the rest of it remains the same in terms of the other members of that committee. And then we have substituted in section 1 for paragraph A the following paragraph: an official at the rank of at least a major general or chief director may be designated on a permanent basis to represent any official mentioned above if he or she is not available, provided that the official listed in paragraph A may also attend. So it provides for an alternative person to attend on behalf of the SAPS delegates. And then the functions of the operational committee: A, review, monitor, and facilitate the support and assistance of the respective government departments or institutions to the directorate, as well as secondment to the directorate and address problems which arise regarding such support and assistance. And then by deletion of subsection 2 of the paragraph, perform such functions as from time to time may be directed at the ministerial committee. You will recall that was an issue that was raised by some of the presenters, that the minister can actually assign tasks to the operational committee. And then C, report to the ministerial committee on interdepartmental assistance and cooperation. That has also been taken out of the amendment. Okay.
Thank you. This is the presentation. I don't know whether members will want to make any suggestions or amendments. Honorable Ramatlaka and Honorable Van Wyk, in that order.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to ask the Secretariat on the replacement of the Assistant Commissioner, the word Assistant Commissioner, the omission of that. What's the reason? And then you're replacing it with what is called Major General. Don't you think that the name Major General is a constitutional clipping? It's a kind of a clipping of unconstitutional terminology into the Act. I don't see any Major General defined anywhere in the Constitution or in law. So I think we should stick to what we have as accepted constitutional naming of. Why can't it be another name? So I'm just asking that question, if you could explain. I find it is quite a creeping of terminology name, which is unconstitutional, actually.
No, Honorable Kulapanat, welcome. We've just started. We waited for half past nine.
Thank you. I was home. We agree fully with the Honorable Ramatlaka in that Major General just springs out at you in this context, and we don't know what it's doing there. We would presume that it should be Divisional Commissioner or Assistant Commissioner, but it can't be Major General. Nowhere else throughout the bill do we talk about ranks. The Constitution does not acknowledge the ranks, so why would we want to bring it in here? So we would like to suggest that they would know best whether it should be Divisional Commissioner at the level of Divisional Commissioner, or whether we should use the word Assistant Commissioner. But that we go back to those that are acknowledged by the Constitution, and also what we're trying to achieve with the bill, please.
Thank so you've made your input.
Yeah. We say that we want that, we agree with the Honourable Ramatlakhani on this point, we want it removed, and we want it to be replaced by the Visional Commissioner or Assistant Commissioner.
Okay, Honourable Ntlovu.
Chairperson, I think I will support that statement because in any event, in the bill, we mustn't talk about the ranks. We must try to avoid the ranks, because immediately when we creep in and talk about the ranks, there will be other areas where we are going to, it will be a quagmire to us, and then we'll go back and say, what about this one, and so on. I think that let us take that line. If we take that line, it must apply to all these other areas where we think it should apply the same, so that you won't go back and talk about one and the same thing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are this the only amendments you want to make on 17J? Anything else?
The Principal Act is amended by the deletion of paragraph B of subsection 2. It is. Okay. So it is done.
In that event, we will then proceed to 17K.
Chair, amendments to 17K of the Act, as inserted by Section 3 of the Act, 14K of the Principal Act is hereby amended, and it deals with parliamentary oversight. Parliament shall effectively, and the current Act reads, Parliament shall effectively oversee the functioning of the Directorate and the committees established in terms of this chapter. What we are adding is Section 2. The National Commissioner shall include in the annual report to Parliament, in terms of Section 55D of the Public Management Act, a report in respect of the performance of the Directorate as a program. So what we're essentially saying here, Chair, is that while you have detectives, administration, etc., as separate programs, the DPCI will now be a sixth program, and it will have to be included as a program report in the annual report. That's the First Amendment. And we've basically included Section 4. The Minister shall determine, with the concurrence of Parliament, policy guidelines for the selection of national priority offences by the head of the Directorate referred to, policy guidelines for the referral to the Directorate by the National Commission of any offence or category offences for investigation by the Directorate, and submit to Parliament any policy guidelines referred to in the section for concurrence, which means that Parliament would need to approve. And then what we have removed is the question of the guidelines being submitted to Parliament, and if Parliament don't approve them within 3 months, submission will be deemed approved. So what we've changed now is that it doesn't matter how long Parliament take to consider those guidelines, they have to approve those guidelines. So it's not that if you don't consider them within 3 months, they deem to be approved. Parliament now has to concur on those guidelines. And then the issue of the Minister shall not later than 3 months after the commencement of this section submit a report to Parliament on whether any legislation three years after the commencement of this section, submit a report to Parliament on whether any legislative amendments are required to improve the functioning of the Directorate. Well, that is part of what we're doing now, so we've removed that. But what we have added is the first policy guideline issued under this Act shall be tabled in Parliament as soon as possible, but not later than 6 months after the appointment of the head in terms of the Act. Any changes to the policy guideline referred to in Section 4 must be submitted to Parliament for consideration and approval. So we cannot just change the guidelines without Parliament's approval. The Minister shall report to Parliament on the appointment of the head of the Directorate.
Honourable George, Honourable Annelies.
Madam Chair, Section 17K2, National Commissioner shall include in the annual report. I don't know whether I must argue this point because it's linked to what we've been saying right through. I find it very difficult to accept that this head of directorate, which we want to be independent, and now and be perceived to be independent, must now not be able to write its own report. Its report must be written by the National Commissioner. So that's the first problem. And now again, 17.4.2, policy guidelines for the referral to the director by the National Committee, any offense or category of offenses. With this 17K4A2.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me why should they be why should this job not be done by the head of directorate? And the criteria and everything. Why should now the National Commission again come in and talk about the category of offences to be sent to the directory?
Chairperson, we want to make some suggestions because we've got similar concerns than that of Mr. George. We want to amend 17K. We want to propose an amendment. And we want to start off by the budget. Because we believe that it's wrong the way it is in the bill in any case. You start with the budget and then you've got the annual report. You don't have the annual report and then the budget. So we want, that's the first change. That needs to be swapped around. So 17K1A, new proposal. The budget report to Parliament must include a full breakdown of the earmarked budget of the directorate. We've already established how the budget is going to be determined, and we now say the budget report to Parliament must include a full breakdown of the earmarked budget. I think we previously used the word ring-fence, but it's not the correct word either. It's earmarked budget. So we must correct it in places where we have actually used it. Then 1B, the head of the directorate must make a presentation to Parliament on the budget of the directorate. 1B, the head of the directorate must make a presentation to Parliament on the budget of the directorate. So then we want to have a substitute section 2 with the following subsection. Can I go on? 2, to now read, we want to propose the following. The National Commissioner shall include in the annual report to Parliament, in terms of Section 55D of the Public Finance Management Act, Act 1 of 1999, a report in respect of the activities of the directorate as a separate program as compiled by the head of the directorate. With other words, it addresses Mr. George's problem. It won't be the National Commissioner who writes that chapter. It will be the head of the directorate who will write the chapter, the program report on the annual report. It will be part of the subs report. It will be a separate program. And the National Commissioner shall include that report to Parliament when we do the annual report. That is the changes we would like to suggest, Chairperson.
Chairperson, honourable members have partly covered what I wanted to raise. But the issue of National Commissioner including as a report what comes from the head of the directorate is becoming problematic because we have not yet come to an agreement about where we are going to place this. So if the directorate has to give a report to National Commissioner, it means we have concluded that this is going to be under SAPS, and we have not come to that conclusion yet. And so I would propose that when it comes to this matter, that we pack it, and later on maybe relook at it. But the other issue I want to raise is that when members want to bring amendments that are substantive, that at least they should give us copies so that we can follow what they're saying, because it was very difficult to write what the Honourable Analyst was saying. Thanks.
Listen, it's difficult to always bring copies because some of these amendments come as we go along. But, I mean, that's why we go over it very slowly and why we ask the department also to capture the proposal so that when we look at it again that we can. Can I just say, Chairperson, while we hear what the Honourable Meshu is saying around where it's going to be situated, we would suggest that we can flag this issue, that we don't miss the proposed amendment. We can flag the issue as part of the bigger debate about where it should be, but in terms of the progress that we are trying to achieve, that we just capture the proposed amendment as well, that it doesn't get lost. That's all we would propose to.
Thank you very much. Any other amendment? Honorable Ramatlakane.
Honorable Chair, I just want to understand the on that 7, the suggested addition on 7, on page 10. It has that the tabling of the as soon as possible. I just want to understand the... And then later on it says 6 months. I just want to understand what is this as soon as possible. Aren't we speaking time? So I'm just wondering, maybe you should explain it. If we're saying that the policy that becomes a guideline will only be 6 months, the threshold is 6 months, but it can be any other time. Why can't it be simultaneous? Why can't it be? Are we saying that we don't have any policy and therefore we need to wait for a particular time after the law is passed? I'm not quite clear what and why is it so? Because surely, I mean, the guidelines in terms of policy is what is going to give effect to kind of work and less of tension. Why this kind of, and I don't understand this as soon as possible, or what you're talking about in law. Is it not any other way that you can define or put the time frame?
Before she responds, Chairperson, it's the first time that you use as soon as possible in the Act, in the bill. The bill itself, it has to come up with a time frame, or it doesn't say as soon as possible. Because if it says that, it means totally different thing to other people. But as soon as possible, it can be tomorrow, or today, this afternoon, as soon as possible. It means a lot of things, Chairperson.
And for that, it can be 10 years. That is true, no? Can be 10 years, believe you may go and read the submissions that they've made to the Portfolio Committee on bail, guidelines on bail. Soon as possible, 2006, it's still soon as possible.
Now, Chairperson, can we propose a amendment that it reads Parliament, not later that issue? It brings to Parliament not later than 6 months after the appointment of the head of the, in terms of this Act. I can understand why it can't be simultaneously, because we're now changing the Act. So there will be some impact in terms of the policy and the guidelines. But I think let's make it quite clear that we say the policy guidelines issued under this Act shall be tabled in Parliament not later than 6 months after the appointment of the head in terms of this Act.
I think that's fine. I think the as soon as possible was the proviso was included, not later than 6 months. So as soon as possible couldn't be longer than 6 months. But I hear what the honourable members are saying, and I think it doesn't alter it. What we want to be able to do is to create a situation where we can bring it earlier than 6 months, so we don't have to wait 6 months. But I think that the amendment that's been suggested clarifies that, because it says not later than 6 months, which allows us to bring it in 3 months if we have it ready within 3 months. Can I also just refer to the section 4.3 around the policy guidelines on the referral of the National Commissioner that was raised by Honourable Member George? I think here we're not talking about the Commissioner making that policy, but the Commissioner is then bound by a policy that is approved by this Parliament as to how the referral of cases occurs. So it can't be just it can't be left to an informal process where the Commissioner refers or instructs the DPCI to handle certain cases. It will be the policy that determines how cases that come to the National Commissioner's attention are referred to the DPCI. There will be a policy process in place. I don't think that sentence reads that the National Commissioner will make that policy. It reads that the National Commissioner will be guided by that policy, and that is, and as with any other national policing policy, the National Commissioner would have to be guided by that.
These guys are disciplining each other.
Why? My question to you, why are you involved in this thing? You say Parliament. Why does the Parliament not just give this thing to the head of directorate? Why do you want to go to where National Commissioner?
Sure, I think Mr. George is not reading the whole of the sentence. It says, what it basically says, that we will determine.
Yes, I agree.
No? We will determine if the National Commissioner wants to refer a case to the Hawks, how it will be done. That's what it says. It doesn't say he's involved. It says, if you read the whole paragraph, it's saying that Parliament will determine the guidelines, Parliament will determine how the National Commissioner will refer cases to the Hawks. That's what it says. Sometimes I wonder about these priests.
I think it's part of that. Are you satisfied, Honourable George? You seem to be satisfied.
No, I'm not quite. But I'm still
trying to understand.
I hear the explanation, but the explanation still does not satisfy me.
he understands. I mean, Honourable George is a politician, so he will not say yes. will motivate a yes to be a yes. Anyway, okay. Any other amendment?
It's just a reference to the PFMA. We just want to make a change there. It must be 40, not 55. It's in 17K, paragraph A. It refers to 55D of the Public Finance Management Act. If we can just make that correct reference to the PFMA. 40.
It's 40D. Thank you very much. Can we then proceed to 17L?
Okay, 17L deals with the judge's role and the complaints mechanism. The amendment proposed is to add a subclause 7, which is the retired judge may request and obtain information from the National Directorate of National Directorate of Public Prosecutions insofar as it may be necessary for the judge to conduct any investigation. I think one of the issues that was raised by both the Constitutional Court and was raised in our discussions with the judge is that the judge may require information from the National Prosecuting Authority in order to properly investigate a matter. So this is to allow the judge that power. I think that's the only amendment from our side on that section.
Chairperson, we've got a couple of amendments that we want to propose. We want to propose after this public, after 7, the retired judge may request and obtain information from the National Director of Public Prosecutors insofar as it may be necessary for the judge to conduct an investigation, to add the word and then B, the insertion of the following new subsection, 7A. The retired judge may request information from any member of the South African Police Service for purpose of any investigation of the judge, and the refusal to comply with such a request shall be a criminal offence for which a person, upon conviction, may be sentenced to a fine or imprisonment, or to both a fine and imprisonment of 2 years.
Honourable Chair, I think I had a proposal, but it sounds like the Honourable Member proposal is addressing my concern. I had a suggestion that that sentence should not stop there. It should continue to make the same point that which will not be unreasonable with health, but now she's adding additional improvement about any member. The judge can request any information from anybody. My suggestion, therefore, I think is covered, because I was going to say that information which is requested by the judge will not be unreasonable with health by any. So I think that I will agree with that improvement.
Any other amendment?
There are more amendments that we would like to add. We would like to add at the end of this section, also to make the judge's independence felt. We feel it's necessary to talk about the judge's funding, where it comes from, etc. So we want to add the insertion of the following subsections. The minister shall ensure that the retired judge has sufficient personnel resources to fulfill his or her functions. That is what 12 says. An operational budget, this is a new section we want to propose, an annual operational budget must be prepared in consultation with the retired judge. And provided for under the budget of the secretary. We're talking about the secretary of police. We don't have to say the secretary of police because it's defined within the act. So that's the proposal we're making. An annual operational budget must be prepared in consultation with the retired judge and approved as, and provided for under the budget of the secretary. So it will become something that the secretary will report to Parliament when it's the annual budget process, that this is the amount that we have made available for the retired judge's operational proposals. Then we want to add more. We want to suggest subsection 14. Subsection 11 shall not be construed to inhibit the retired judge to investigate any matter which relates to an ongoing investigation. 11 refers to chairperson, whether a person is allowed to find out whether there's an investigation against them or not. Now what we're saying is, the new 14 reads, subsection 11 shall not be construed to inhibit the retired judge to investigate any matter which relates to an ongoing investigation. Want to add more, two more? 15. The secretary, again we're talking about the secretary of police, we're not defining it because it's in the act, in consultation with the retired judge, must develop and implement a plan to promote knowledge on the functions and role of the complaints mechanism, both in respect of the public and members of the directorate. I'll repeat it again. The secretary, in consultation with the retired judge, must develop and implement a plan to promote knowledge on the functions and role of the complaints mechanism, both in respect of the public and members of the directorate. 16. Now we've talked about interference from the level of police. We want also to talk about interference from the level of any person, public, etc., etc. So we are proposing section 16. Any interference with the retired judge in the performance of his or her functions and duties shall be a criminal offence for which a person upon conviction may be sentenced to a fine or imprisonment of 2 years. You want to have both, or both? Chairperson likes this, or both. I'll repeat it again. 16. Any interference with the retired judge. Now we're talking politicians, general public, whoever else interfering. Any interference with the retired judge in the performance of his or her functions and duties shall be a criminal offence for which a person upon conviction may be sentenced to a fine or imprisonment of 2 years, or both.
Those are the amendments, members. Honorable Ramatlakane.
Chair, there are amendments there that I think they are very important, but they are quite massive amendments. There is one that speaks about this investigative judge will not be prohibited by, I'm not sure what is this catch-all. It's like a phrase that is almost catch-all phrase, suggestion. If you could repeat that one, I just want to hear it. Subsection 11, you said. It sounds like catch-all phrase. I just want to hear, and if you could please just motivate to understand what is in your head about that.
Maybe I should read subsection 11 first. Subsection 11 says any person who makes a complaint in terms of this section, in other words, a complaint to the judge, shall not be entitled to use this section to establish whether there is an investigation against him or her, nor be entitled to any delay, interference, or termination of such investigation on the basis that such complaint has been made. Now, what we're proposing, Chair, through you, is that subsection 11 can't be used to inhibit the retired judge to investigate any matter which relates to an ongoing investigation. That's basically all we're doing.
Just a question about the judge, the acting judge involvement in the draft budget. What is the transitional arrangement that you suggest, given the act that we're going to be passing now, and we would then have the acting judge? There must be some transitional mechanism. I don't know what the drafter would suggest, because the new suggestion suggests that it should be in consultation. In consultation, the presupposes that is already existing judge in a moment. But that's why I'm asking what is a transitional mechanism? I think there should be some transitional arrangement that we may have to bring in order to accommodate that. And then the following year, then that whole thing becomes an automatic.
No, you've pressed the wrong button.
Thank you. Chair, this issue of the judge, when this was initially mooted, there was a thought that SAPS members would make use of this. But in light of the information we were given from the Secretary of Police, that I believe he's only dealt with, what was it, two issues in the last 5 years, four or five years, it means that SAPS members are not using this this procedure as a complaints mechanism at all. I mean, public certainly doesn't know about it, although, you know, in the bill it says, in the original one, says that they're there to basically take complaints from members of the public or SAPS members. But it does seem that it's not utilized. And I don't know if there shouldn't be an investigation into some other possible means, because if one is saying there is a complaints mechanism and yet the public doesn't know about it and SAPS members don't use it, which seems evident from the fact we were told there were only just two cases dealt with by this judge. I mean, the judge is paid, has staff, has everything, and yet basically has had no work to do for all these years. So I don't know if it's going to be seen to be an effective mechanism at all to deal with complaints, and many times dealing with complaints after the fact, after the interference has already happened. It's not in any way a preventative measure, and certainly doesn't seem to be working effectively at all. So I don't know that even this beefing it up slightly is going to be seen to be giving the unit any sort of protection. So I can't.
Chairperson, my question is about this retired judge.
Can you put your mic in, please?
The retired judge. Who appoints this retired judge? How does I need clarity on who appoints this retired judge, and for is there any duration of time that he will be holding office? Thanks.
Yeah, the appointment of a retired judge is actually in the bill, and maybe the legal team can just refer to it. It's done with, if I remember correctly, in conjunction with the Minister of Justice, because you need to have the Minister of Justice cooperation in this, because the Justice Department continues to pay the salary of retired judges. Retired judges never retire, really. So they get salaries in any case. So as far as I know, it is in the bill, but I can talk to that. I just want to say, in terms of the mechanism itself, Chairperson, I think, you know, this is a question of the chicken and the egg, which one comes first. One can look at it and you can say, but there's only been two complaints over the past 5 years of interference, and that's why the retired judge was only used for these two complaints, to investigate these two complaints. I think the point is that it's also for the members of the Hawks to complain in terms of interference, and not the general police staff members. That's the other one. Or for people that feel that they are treated wrongly, etc. In terms of the transitional arrangement, my understanding as it is in terms of the funding, the transitional arrangements in terms of the funding of the judge, my understanding is that the Secretary of Police did indicate last week that the position is currently vacant, that currently this person's operational budget is budgeted for and the SAPS budget. Now, nothing stops this committee to ask the legal team to draft a transitional arrangement that transfer that budget already to the Secretariat's budget for that specific purpose. So nothing stops us as part of the transitional arrangements that needs to be done. The Honourable Ramatlakane is correct. We haven't thought about it, but that nothing stops us by saying to the legal team now that they must look at transitional arrangement for this, and that we suggest that the budget as allocated in SAF's budget for the retired judge operational cost be transferred in totality to the budget of the Secretariat, remembering that the Secretariat still at this stage is a cost center of SAPS, so there's no big issues around this.
Chair, I think that in retrospect, we would support that submission. One of the issues that the retired judge did have was around some of the budgeting issues. Obviously, his salary is paid. So I think we would support that. And there were more practical issues than anything else. But I also wanted to just respond to what the Honourable Member Kola Barnard raised. My understanding is one of the amendments that has been proposed by the committee by Honourable Member Van Wyk is to that the Secretariat together with the judge must, I haven't got the exact wording yet, but basically must implement a plan to let everybody know about the judge's existence, because I think the problem is what's in legislation is not always understood by members of the public and even by members of FATS. So my understanding is that would address some of the issues that the Honourable Member Kola Barnard was saying, that if we do need to let people know what is in legislation, be they SAPS members of the DPCI or be they members of the public.
I may be left behind here. Which act does it refer to the judge? Which act, SAPS Act? Which paragraph? Which paragraph?
Through you, can we just ask the Secretary, there was a question around the appointment of the judge, to just look at that section in the original Act and just read it to the committee, because, I mean, that question was asked, who appoints, etc., etc.
The section reads, the Minister shall, after consultation with the Minister of Justice and the Chief Justice, appoint a retired judge in order to investigate complaints referred to in subsection 4. And subsection 4 reads, the retired judge may receive complaints in the prescribed form and manner from any member of the public who can provide evidence of a serious and unlawful infringement of his or her rights caused by an investigation by the directorate, any member of the directorate who can provide evidence of any improper influence or interference, whether of a political or any other nature, exerted upon him or her regarding the conduct of any investigation. I think the issue for us is that the issue, you can't predict that there's going to be independence. What we need to make clear in the legislation is that even though an investigation is still underway, you should be able to report to the judge. But it's impossible to predict in advance that there's going to be a complaint.
Jefferson, yeah. I think in terms of a complaints mechanism, it's going to be difficult for this committee to come with any suggestion that is going to be stronger than that of a retired judge, whose appointment comes not only through the minister, but through the Minister of Justice as well as the Chief Justice. And a retired judge whose salary is outside of such still being paid by the Justice Department as such. The operational part of the budget, I think, was problematic that it was within SAPS. I think if we move it out to the Secretariat, we also make sure that you don't use finances to hamper the work of the retired judge.
Okay. Thank you very much. We proceeding. 17M. Chair, 17M is the following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after 17L, and the subheading is Command and Control of the Directorate. 17M, subject to the provisions of this Act, members of the Directorate or members of the South African Police Service with all the powers, duties and functions of other members of the South African Police Service.
Jefferson, on the side of the ANC, we would like to propose the deletion of the section completely. We are irritated by the use of the words command and control, first of all, because not even the Constitution talks about command and control. That's the one thing. We believe that the powers that the investigators of the DPCI needs to have in terms of policing powers are in any case provided for in the SAPS Act. And it's unnecessary, and it clouds the issue to have this section here. So we would propose the deletion of this section.
Honorable Chair, I will fully support that amendment.
Command and control. Okay.
Maybe we should revisit the issue of ranks and
salaries. And the Constitution refers to manage and control, and not command and control. And probably that's the term we should be using commonly within SACS, manage and control, and not command and control, because it has its own repercussions. Thank you very much. We seem to be agreeing with the deletion of that section. Thank you very much. We're moving on to 18. I mean 17, I'm sorry. No, but it's 18. 17. 17, yes. There's nothing.
Chair, we're dealing now with the transitional arrangements of the Act. And there are a couple of amendments. I think we need to also take into account that some of the amendments suggested by the Portfolio Committee may change some of these transitional provisions. As the Honourable Member said, we need to include the issue of the budget for the judge in the transitional provisions. There may be others. But currently, the first amendment is the commencement of the South African Police Service Amendment Act 2012. In this section referred to as Amendment Act, does not affect the validity of any investigation or prosecution conducted pending or under investigation by the Directorate on or before the commencement of this Act. That is just to make sure that we don't lose investigations that are currently underway. As from the date of commencement of this Act, the post of the head of the Directorate, deputy head of the Directorate, and provincial head of the Directorate must be filled in accordance with Section 17CA of the Act, as asserted by the Amendment Act, but the current incumbents of the respective posts will continue to hold office until the respective posts are filled. So what it means is because the terms of and conditions of service are changing so dramatically, we would have to reappoint. But until that reappointment occurs, the current heads would remain in place. So whether that was a formality or not, there would have to be a reappointment process that occurred because we're changing the conditions of service to 7 years, etc. Subsection 3 reads, subject to the Labour Relations Act, the head of the Directorate may evaluate any member for continued employment in the Directorate to ensure that the Directorate focuses on its mandate, and may redeploy a member to another post in the service by agreement with the National Commission and after consultation with the members involved. And I think General Dramat can just speak to that at the end, what that means in terms of the way we're restructuring. And then, as from the date of the commencement of this section, but subject to Section 2 and 3, any person who immediately before the date held the office of a member of the South African Police Service in the Directorate remains in the Directorate. The administrative and support personnel in the employ of the Directorate immediately before that date remain in the employ of the Directorate. Any employee contemplated in Section 3 may be transferred to the Directorate only with his or her consent. Any employee referred to in Subsection 3 who does not consent to be transferred to the Directorate must within 30 days of the date of commencement of the Amendment Act notify the National Commissioner in writing. In respect of any of the employees, the National Commissioner may offer to transfer the employee to a reasonable alternate post or position in the South African Police Service subject to the Labour Relations Act. So 6 is A and B. So if the person doesn't want to be transferred to the Directorate, then the National Commissioner can seek an alternate post. But I'll ask General Dramat to speak to particularly the issue of people, the transfers of people, etc.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Good morning. Just to further elaborate on the issue of the provision that the head may redeploy or suggest redeployment of a member within the directorate based on the mandate. Now, last week we did give an indication that the mandate of the directorate is to deal with the top slices, what we used in any of these specific crimes. If you can, for instance, use the example of on the violent crime or the organized crime, say, of hijacking or house robberies, which is organized in nature, and we might have personnel that is specifically trained to deal with violent crime, types of crime, and within the mandate on the top slice of the directorate, you might not investigate the issues of hijacking or house robberies. Therefore, given the skills of that member, it might be necessary to suggest a redeployment of that member to the detective services where such incidents of crimes would be investigated. So it makes provision for that, that after the mandate that the DPCI has and a member does not necessarily possess the necessary skills or would better be utilized within other parts of the detective services.
So, now, thank you, Chair. You know, this transitional arrangement on sub 3, the evaluation based on Labor Relations Act, and that brings in the words of may redeploy and so on. I must say I'm worried about it. I'm worried about it for various reasons. Why do we need to have a normal management worker relationship in terms of performance in the Act, empowered by the Act to do certain things? What is it that we are not told that is actually the problem, that we want to use this transitional arrangement to get some of the people out? Sometimes it's even go to an extent that you could look at it as a purge. I'm worried, Chair, about this. There's something underlying that I'm not seeing here, but it's certainly a brick coming. I want to suggest that as we stand today, all the people that are employed, whether in the Hawks or in the police, they are employed in based on a contract and a performance contract of what they need to do. We don't need the law, as we pass the law here, to have a transitional arrangement for their performance or redeployment to some other unit. I have a difficulty in accepting this. I just see something coming that we are not seeing. With respect to General, what you're explaining, it's maybe a top of a service, not quite what this will end up being. So I would humbly suggest that provision like that, where a member is incapacitated or unperforming, there is a other way to deal with it rather than bringing the Act to be that leverage. That's my sense on this. I don't have a problem with the issue about, once you come to the issue of the redeployment, and that issue for me is what we are not told, which is a problem that we want to use this Act for.
Now, Chairperson, I also want to know what the thinking here is, because first of all, I think 4 should precede 3, if we even go ahead with 3, where we talk about, as from the date of commencement of this section, but subject to subsections 2 and 3, any person immediately before the date held the office of a member. Now, we can understand in terms of the heads and the provincial heads. That is fine. Is it necessary for us to make, we haven't, there is not these, your mandate is not changed dramatically. is there really a need, as the Honourable Ndlovu was saying, of having that in here? As Labour legislation, I'm sorry, as Ramat Lakhani is saying, I just... I hope not. is it really necessary to make provision for it? I can understand that we've had it here when we were talking DSO SAPs. That I can understand. I don't quite understand why we have it here currently. Maybe there's a good reason, but then they need to explain to us the reason why it's necessary to have it here. One doesn't want to start creating the impression that we now yet again restructuring. So maybe some clarity on this, why it is necessary. Because earlier in the amendment bill, we made provision for the head of the Hawks in any case to transfer people if necessary. We make provision for the head of the Hawks to fire people who are not performing. So why do we want to make provision for it in the transitional arrangements? And then just lastly, Chairperson, to then add that section about the money, the transfer of the judge's money budget.
I thought I will wait for this answer because if you go down, it talks about the National Commissioner in writing. Again, it goes back to the head of the head of the directorate instead of the National Commissioner, because we are talking about the people who is heading this directorate, not the National Commissioner. But it seems that if I want to wait for this answer first, because I may have a debate with this answer again before I come to this one.
Chair, I've just consulted with the DPCI head who and the legal people here, because it's them that have to implement the transition clause, and they don't feel that taking up that section that people have a problem with would be a problem. I think General Dramatic explained that they were trying to look at purifying their roles, but at the moment the DPCI has been given cases which they don't feel are within their scope. However, we have no problem with taking that section out if it's causing a concern. With regard to the section that Honourable Member Ndlovu has just raised,
in fact, maybe even before you agree to take out, we wanted to know the rationale for putting it behind it, because it's not just about removing it or taking it out. We want to know as to why, and therefore why it should not create a problem when it is taken out.
Lucheto, I'm a bit far, you can't see me very well. Sure, thanks, Chair. Yes, you see, this section, it's really important, because subsection 5 says an employee contemplated in subsection 3 may be transferred to the directorate only with his or her consent. Am I on the correct? To me, it gives these employees a right of belonging and the human rights dignity that is there. It prevents the power of the head of the directorate to move as he or she likes the individual employees. Thanks, Chair.
I might be forced to request Honourable Ndlovu and Honourable George to...
One on that side,
yeah.
One on this side.
No, because I think you are indeed extremely out of order. There will not be a member in the portfolio committee who, when he raises an issue, members begin to behave in a manner that undermines that member. The chairperson will definitely not allow that. And I will request that we don't do it, because it is not correct. Members of the portfolio committee must feel free to speak
in meetings without being seen as talking nonsense or rubbish. Because if we were to do that, it will make this portfolio committee not to function properly. So I will really request that we don't do it. I humbly am requesting that, and I'm serious about it. I'm requesting that we don't do it. Any member of the portfolio committee must feel free to raise his or her hands in this portfolio committee and ask any question. Any question. Without being seen to be looked down or asking rubbish in the manner in which you're behaving. I think you're not doing it correctly. We are all honorable. And I've ruled on this matter, and I will request that it doesn't happen. Let's go to the...
Chair, I'm going to ask General Dramat to respond, because I don't think that there was any malicious intention in putting it in here. But I think he will discuss, will explain some of the historical factors that have led to this. However, as I said, that and our reasons for saying we agreed to take it out is because, as Honourable Member Van Baker has raised, it already is covered for in other sections of the Act. But I'll just ask General Dramat to explain why we put it in here.
Thank you, Chair. The inclusion of this must be understood in its historical context. With the establishment of the DPCI, it indicated that it will be members from the former DSO, from the former organized crime, from former commercial crimes units that will be recruited to form the DPCI. What happened is that the whole organized crime and commercial crimes, together with the former DSO, were all put into the DPCI. Also, the whole mandate of the, including with the mandates of commercial crime and organized crime, was included and is currently being dealt with by the DPCI. There is a process, and in line with the Act and with the bill that's proposed now, of beginning to purify the issue of the mandate of the DPCI, to begin to focus on what we referred to last week as the top slice of these crime phenomena. And in line with that, personnel needs to be re-evaluated. Remember that it's all members from organized crime, all members of commercial crime, that they might not be fitting the requirements in terms of the mandate of the DPCI, and therefore one needs to reconsider their deployment to, as I suggested, units that one would advocate needs to be within the detective service of organized crime and commercial crimes units. So that was just the context as to why the inclusion, but as said, that there are other provisions that could be utilized, and it's not necessary for us to insert the provision here.
Honorable Lefeto is then saying Section 5 of this bill is referring to that subsection. What, therefore, are the implications if we are now removing Section 3?
Subsection 5 doesn't refer to subsection... it doesn't have to necessarily refer to... because this is about transferring to the directorate, not out of the directorate. Okay, so this is that we only want people who want to be in the directorate. You don't want to transfer somebody into the directorate because they're forced into the directorate. So I think that we could take out that subsection 3, an employee may only be transferred to the directorate with his or her consent. And then in terms of what has been raised by, I think it was Honourable Member Ntlovo, with regard to the National Commissioner, I think here we're not talking about people that are in the directorate. We're talking about a person, for example, from SATS, who we want to transfer into the directorate, but that person may not want to go to the directorate. If that person doesn't want to go to the directorate, we don't necessarily want them in the directorate. Because if a person doesn't want to be in a serious job like this, we don't want them. Then the National Commission must look for another post for them in SAPS. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about the National Commissioner interfering with the existing staff within the directorate and transferring them. We're talking about people that we would like to transfer into the directorate. They must agree to that transfer, because we don't want people working in the structure who don't want to be there because then they're likely to cause chaos. And if they refuse to be there, the National Commissioner must look at an alternate transfer for them. So it's not about the National Commissioner being able to interfere with the staff that are already in the Directorate Chair.
The fact is that that issue becomes really irrelevant if we remove that this section, because it doesn't agree, it doesn't deal on Secretary of Police with people who are coming free. It deals with people who must leave. So we're saying free must go. So the concern that Ms. Ndlovu has disappears when we say free must go.
I'm assuming you do away with 3 and 5. There's 6. You see, 6 worries me. It says the National Government may offer to transfer. My problem now, we should not be seen, because we'll be taken to court, to using the formation of the Directorate to get rid of certain police in the service. Because if you say may, assuming the head of the Directorate says I'm linking 5 or 6, this person says that the National Director says no, sorry, under the circumstances I don't want to work under the Directorate of what I'm saying, the may worries me, because this person has not done anything except that he doesn't want to. And to me, it must be the National Commissioner must take that person, not may offer. It was, what if the National, he doesn't want to be in the Directorate. The National Commissioner says, no, thank you very much, I don't want you. What happened to this person? It means it's some sort of a false.
Chairperson, the problem is here that the drafters has been a bit negligent, quite frankly, because three deals continued employment, so it deals with current members. Now you keep on referring in 5 and 6, and that's why the Honourable George has got a problem with it as well, with people who are going to become new members of this directorate. And I think the drafters need to clean up this mess, because they're now creating their own problems here around the table. 5 and 6 should remain, but it deals with new members, people that the head of the Hawks now go and says, I want you to become a member of the Hawks. The person says, I don't want to be a member of the Hawks. I don't even think there's going to be a necessity for 6, because that person will be in a current position when you offer him employment in the Hawks. He's going to be in a current position. He's not going to vacate the position, then go to the Hawks and then say, I don't want to be there, although it's SAPs we're talking about. They normally do things the other way around. He might find himself in that position and then says, I don't want to be there. But the fact of the matter is, Chairperson, if you think about it logically, three talks about continued employment, therefore take it out. It's been dealt with before. 5 and 6 refer to new members, new recruits that you want for this. Now, a new recruit does not mean a constable. It can be a brigadier. It can be a major somewhere else that you want to recruit. Then 5 and 6 should remain in here.
But don't refer to
3. Take out 3, because 3 is the wrong subsection to refer to.
I want to read 6A, an employee who does not consent to be transferred to the directorate must, within 30 days of the date of the commencement of the Amendment Act, notify the National Commissioner in writing that I don't want to be transferred to the directorate. Is this what you say? Oh, okay. So you say, I want him here to join the directorate. I need 5 people. And then what we are saying is that within 30 days they may agree or disagree to join the directorate. This is what we are saying. I just want to understand it practically. Honorable Ramatlakane, Honorable Reverend Mishe, Honorable Tebe, Honorable Annelies.
Honorable Chair, the 6 that we're talking about, is it not this reference to new people?
Why do you talk about transfer then?
New people. Why is it that we need new people to give 30 days notice? I'm not sure what we, is it, because I think there's a bit of a mixture with the two, because if you are already in existing employment and you don't want to be transferred or you don't want to stay there any longer, there's a different mechanism. But if you're a new person that you're headhunting or looking for people, either a person accepts employment, he comes over, or not. On a basis that you are presenting him with a particular package, or not, or he remains in the current position where he is and she was employed. You don't need the provision for 30 days. If I'm offered a contract, I either accept the contract or I don't. So I'm just not understanding the 6 as it stands, because I think the 6 is linked to people who are transferred in between. So that's why I have a problem with it.
Remember, they may actually be from SAPS. In fact, they're from SAPS. And saying they are moving to directorate. And you are saying, come today. And they come. What happens to SAPS? That's one other issue that we need to look into. They leave subs today, come to me tomorrow, and then what happens? I'm just saying that. Honorable Stevie?
Thank you, Chair. I'm partly covered here because I'm also of the opinion that if DPCI want the head out on somebody, they will go into consultation, and if the person gives his consent, they will carry on with the process. If he's not interested, why should there be anything in the act to say now he must act on it and within 30 days to give his consent if you look at B, in respect of such an employee, the National Commissioner may offer to transfer the employee to a reasonable alternative post, and the Honourable Annelies Van Wyk said that the person is currently in a post. Why should he be transferred to another post? So I think this should in total be scrapped. Thank you.
That was my point, Chairperson, that the relevance of 6, it depends on 3. Now, if you delete 3, 6 becomes irrelevant, so it has to be scrapped also.
And I think it comes back to what I said, it was sloppy drafting. And I think we need to ask them to revisit this whole thing. Because 6, in my mind, the only reason why you might want to have 6 there, when you've asked somebody or you asked for a person to be transferred to the unit, the only reason why I can see logically why you want something like 6 there is to make an end to an administrative process. That somewhere on the record, the person was offered the position, the person declined the position. That's all. It doesn't really serve any purpose other than that. So I really think we can spend a lot of time here trying to find out why, but I think they need to go and redraft this whole section, taking consideration that we say 3 goes out, 5 stays. 6, I'm not sure whether it should be at all. As I say, unless it is to put an end to administrative process, but then you don't need 6B, then you'd only need 6A. without the reference to subsection 3.
Reference to subsection 3 in 5, has that been deleted or we left it at?
Okay. Yeah, I think I would agree with what the Honourable Member Van Wyk is saying about it needing to be reworded. I think for us it's important to include 5 and 6, but in a reworked form. The reason for that is, and this refers specifically, if the DPCI are employing somebody from outside SAPS, then the issue of accepting, etc., comes into play. But if it's a transfer within SAPS, one of the issues is that you can be transferred within SAPS even if you don't want to go to that position. You can write a motivation to the National Commissioner arguing why you shouldn't be transferred, but at the end of the day, the National Commissioners can say, I've read your motivation, and you get transferred anyway. Now, what we're trying to prevent is those sorts of people being transferred into the DPCI, and that's what 5 speaks to, and I think that we need to clean up 5 and 6, particularly in relation to 3 being taken out. So I would request that we, when we're making the amendments, we come back to the committee, because we certainly wouldn't want to remove 5 and 6A, because that speaks to the kind of person that gets transferred into the Hawks, and they must be somebody that is committed to doing the job. We don't want people who are just thumbs on seats.
Yes, I think we should agree. But, you know, the motivation sparks another question. Are you suggesting that what you're trying to manage through this provision is the deadwood being transferred from SAPS into the directorate? Is what you're suggesting? Is that what you're trying to prevent by this? Now, I'm just trying to understand this because the motivation to me is the other way around, is that the National Commissioner could decide to transfer from SAPS into the directorate. And my understanding is different, is that the director of the Hawks, the head, would make a request or to the National Commissioner for that, this is the person I'm looking for, and there's an agreement that this person can come over, then the arrangement is with the National Commissioner to say, yes, this person must go over. But that motivation, the tail part of that motivation is suggested the other way around.
Madam Chair, probably something linked to this, but not directly. Would they, when they clean this thing, look at the issue of career limiting? You see, because if you look at police or anybody, they were careers. Now, already we have limited the head of the directorate is at the level of assistant commissioner. Say you got good guys in the head of the in the directorate who are brigadiers, and they're doing a good job. But you see, there is no post beyond, because if you look at the structure of the director, what do you do about those people? Do you expect them now to leave the directorate and go back to the SAPS, where they have a chance of going up major and so on? What's going to be the situation? Because if you don't look at that, you're going to have a situation where you lose the best, which are already in your directorate.
Yes, thank you. Honourable Analyst, you know, as you respond, I wish really that you remind me as to where we have covered a situation where the head of directorate does not get every friend and people that will say yes to him, and that is all, because we're giving a lot of powers to the head of directorate in trying to make it too independent. How are we going to ensure that we do not then see people who are his friends, and irrespective, people will just say yes, go yes, stop yes, sit yes. I just want to be sure that we have something that does not end up producing this very powerful person who, whatever goes, you know. I'm just saying that. Whilst we want it independent, and I'm not relating it to the National Commission. I'm referring to itself. If somewhere in the bill I can actually be shown that we do not end up with this person who is everything. Honourable Annelies?
Chairperson, I don't think there is something like that. It would be interesting to come up with wording and all that. I don't think there's anything like that anywhere in government. It's a challenge that we have. Chair, I think in order to move on, because we still got the schedules to deal with, and there are amendments that we want to propose there as well, I think the department needs to go and rewrite the transitional arrangements, including that of the budget of the judge, and come back to us so that we can look at those, taking in consideration all the arguments that was made. I didn't see the secretary's explanation as debt would being deployed into the Hawks. I more saw it, and I think this committee and its members know, that you get to a station and you're told by a detective, I don't want to be a detective. I never wanted to be a detective. I was forced to be a detective. It is to make sure that that does not happen. So I think in terms of that, you know, there might be a need for six, but reword it so that it's clear in terms of what it means. See, but you also reminded me about the fact that we said, and I don't know whether that we've adequately captured that, is the fact that we want to make it clear that the head of the Hawks have no other management functions within the SAPS other than dealing with the Hawks. Somewhere it needs to be captured. That the head of the Hawks, and includes the provincial heads of the Hawks, have no other management functions other than dealing with the Hawks. With other words, you can't have a situation when Parliament calls the National Commissioner of SAPS to come before Parliament, and the National Commissioner sends the head of the Hawks on his or her behalf. He can send one of his other deputies, but he can't send the head of the Hawks. Or join us when we are northwest or wherever else. We enjoy General Dramat's company, but we believe that he can spend his time far better.
Chair, I think that we would need to look at where it, make a recommendation to you on where that appropriately fits in to the Act, which section, and where we clean it up, come back with, maybe around the appointment, except it doesn't just apply to the head, it applies to everybody. So we need to just discuss that with the state law advisors. And my suggestion is that we clean up Section 6, because as General Dramat has just pointed out, when the Act comes into being, there may also be people that are currently in the DPCI that don't want to be there anymore and need to be and would like to be transferred out. So I think if you can allow us the opportunity to clean up that section and come back to you with a clean section on 5 and 6. On the transitional arrangements, yeah.
See, I've been seconded by the members to ask you, before we continue with the schedules, whether we can't have a tea break because we've heard the tea cups outside. I was asked by the Honourable Honourable to motivate for this.
Now is 11 o'clock. We'll come back at 11.
Chair, before we rise, if I could put something to you that's not related to the bill, please. I need to formally ask that this committee discuss, in terms of National Assembly Rule 202, to hold hearings on this entire saga involving the reinstated head of crime intelligence, Richard Mluli. I know that you have said that this committee is not a court of law, of course it's not, but I do want to point out that the National Assembly Rule 201B says that we must maintain oversight over the police and exercise that oversight over and the exercise of national executive authority within the police. And really, the South African public has for almost a year now been subject to this entire Richard and Luli saga. I believe that it is damaging our top four key institutions, the NPA, the SAPS, literally Crime Intelligence, Office of the Inspector General, National Prosecuting Authority. It goes on and on. There are just too many unanswered questions about why he was put back in that job, who put him there, many other questions that need to be asked. So really, I think that this committee must actually take the opportunity to hold hearings about the matter. And I would suggest calling in, and that's just my suggestion, there may be others, but calling in initially the Minister and the National Police Commission to discuss this issue. So I would submit that this is put to the committee, please.
We definitely will consider that. However, it's not in the agenda of the police today. I would want just to mention one fact. First, that Honorable Kolapanat is now saying we consider inviting the Minister and the Acting National Commissioner. The letter that is with me says we invite General Mzuli to appear before the Portfolio Committee. And in that letter, in the meeting, I think on Friday, I said to the Portfolio Committee, I don't think it's going to help to this day to invite General Mzuli. And there are reasons to that effect. First, on the 17th of April, when the department appeared before the Portfolio Committee, the chairperson allocated time for the Portfolio Committee to engage on the matter with the department. I put three matters for discussion. One, the allegations around the Katumanu unit and the murder of suspects alleged to be committed by that unit, the head of the Hawks in KZN, and of course Richard Mzuli. Members of the Portfolio Committee engaged with the department. I further allowed members, different parties, to declare their support to the investigations on these matters. Investigations. Because all of them remain allegations. All of them are serious allegations. We can't have a unit in SAP that is referred to as a murder squad today. And we say, no, it's fine. We want clarity whether it is correct to refer to it as a murder squad or not. And that is why we would feel strongly that we must be told through investigations that, no, that is not true. Members, commented on the matter, asked questions, and they declared support for investigations. Of course, Honorable Kolapanat said she has not got nothing to say. That was the first issue. The second issue is about what appears to be in the public domain. One, allegations around General Mzuli having been involved in the murder of the late Mr. Ramokile. The matter, we are told, there is an inquest on the matter. Now, an inquest is a very legitimate process that will tell all of us as South Africa as to whether on the face value there is anything that says, yes, General Mzuli, you may have been involved in the murder of that person. It's a legitimate process presided over by a judge and people coming to give information, and the judge will pronounce himself. If you invite General Mzuli to come here and say, tell us, is it true that you were involved in the murder of the late Mr. Ramokile? Surely if I was Mzuli, I would simply say, no, I'm being investigated. I did not murder. I'm investigated. I'm not going to incriminate myself. I'm not going to give evidence that will be used against me. And this matter is being investigated. There is a date set already for the inquest.
I would imagine that all of us will therefore wait for that process, because I believe NPA, by going the route of inquest, is trying to remove the perception that they declined to prosecute because of political influence. I think that is the correct route for NPA to take. What do we say to General Mzuli when he appears before the portfolio committee? He brings his lawyers and he says, talk to my lawyers, I'm not going to say anything. That is the second issue. The third issue is related to Secret Service funds, fraud and corruption associated with that. First, this portfolio committee really has no oversight role over Secret Service fund. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the Inspector General is already investigating the matter. I understand Honorable Kola Banat requested the public protector to investigate, and the public protector said, let's wait for this process to unfold and to be finished. So there is again an investigation in that regard. But say we were to invite General Mzuli to appear before the portfolio committee. First, he says, you're talking about Secret Service fund. Close the meeting. Say we then close the meeting. Then the next question, he says, are you vetted? We say, we're not vetted. And then he says, I'm being investigated by the GI. Do you want me to talk about these things? What do we say? Is it really assisting to invite him? No, I don't believe so. The third issue now that is coming up in this whole thing is the issue where it would be said there is like there is some tension amongst the managers within the department. This now is indeed affecting the portfolio committee immediately. And we're not aware that there is any investigation that is being that is taking place. That is the matter which even yesterday on the news I said it's the matter that we think as the portfolio committee we should therefore consider inviting the political head to come and assure this portfolio committee that there is no tension, or if there is tension, this is how they are managing that tension, and it's not going to have negative impact on the police. I responded to it yesterday in the news. But the letter that I have and the letter that I, in writing, will be sending the response to Honorable Kola Banat was saying I must call Mr. Mzuli, General Mzuli, to come and appear before the portfolio committee. I sit here even today. I still stand by what I said on Thursday, that I don't believe it will give us anything to invite Mr. Mzuli. We'll be doing it for the sake of doing it. The fact that General Mzuli was here, some of us had very serious reservations with him, even in the meeting that week, because we were not very sure. But of course, he's back at work. He is working. You would not say, don't come or come to the meeting. So I just want to say that, and I stand by that, to say it will not assist this portfolio committee to invite General Mzuli. There's nothing that we're going to get out of him. And to remind members that we have a very limited role to play. In fact, we have no role to play when it comes to Secret Service funds. But the implications and the impact of this whole debacle is beginning now to affect. In fact, it's not even beginning. Surely it has been our own concern. That is why we raised it when the department appeared before the portfolio committee. It was out of realizing the fact that we just cannot pretend as if there is nothing that is happening or said about this matter out there. This is what I'm saying. And I said it yesterday, that I indeed do believe that it is something that we now need to seriously consider, because we can't have a situation where it is said at the level of senior management there are tensions. They might have serious repercussions and negative impact in the police service. And this is what I am standing by.
I'm really loath to contradict you in any way, but the letter I sent you doesn't actually say that I'm asking for Richard Mzuli to be brought before this committee. I've read over it maybe five times. I ask simply that we look at the matter in that the man was reinstated. Any other SAPS member, and we've all seen the outcome of the report about the looting of the secret fund. Any other SAPS member accused of even one of these things would have been suspended on the spot. And that is an issue I believe we can discuss with the Minister and the National Police Commissioner, because one or other of them took that decision. So I at no stage asked you to call Richard and Bluley here. I did attempt to engage with him at some stage during the briefings, but the National Police, the Acting National Police Commissioner wouldn't allow that. He said, no, you may not. And he would not allow that. So I really believe it's incumbent upon this committee to look at this matter. But I just wanted to correct that. I did not ask that Richard and Lily be called in. I believe the National Police Commissioner and the Acting National Police Commissioner and the Minister should come. Thank you.
Get into the argument, but I'm just going to ask. I mean, I read Cabinet report. I also read that the people which the Honourable Member said must be involved, in terms of that turmoil, they are also alleged to be involved. This individual has made a serious allegation against the Minister. He has made allegations against the Acting Commissioner. He's made allegations against the Provincial Commissioner of Gauteng and many other people. And I heard that the Cabinet has set a committee to look at the matter. Now, I'm not saying we should not do that, but I'm just saying, if you're calling the people who, some of them, in terms of his allegations, are involved, are you not going to create a situation where even themselves might say, we are being accused. If you call us here, we might... Of course, I saw the Acting National Commissioner in one of the papers responding. But I'm just worried about that. If this matter is held somewhere, is it not proper for us to wait until we get all the information? I was just asking that.
Chairperson, there are two ways of dealing with this matter. Chairperson, we are anxious to do an oversight to all these matters that we are talking about. But I think today and now it's not an opportune to do so. Should we then, as a committee, wait until both sides clear themselves? Because why I'm saying that, I'm using the analogy that you have just used. Because anybody that you call to your committee and is being investigated somewhere, we will say that, sorry, I don't want to implicate myself. I don't want to say anything. Thank you for calling me, and goodbye. And then we'll be wasting a lot of time, and so on. Can we then, I'm requesting the all members of the committee, can we just wait until something is finalized somewhere, and then we know exactly how to deal with this matter, because now we come in the middle of everything, because somebody else is implicating some other people, and other people are defending themselves, and there is an investigation on the other side from constitutional affairs, the justice and constitutional affairs. These sorts of things are in a snowball. Let them run through so that we are able to say, this is our focus. Where are you in this focus? And how do we get out of this focus? And so on and so forth. Even your question, say, of impinging on the functioning of the police and so on, the minister and the acting commissioner will say, at this moment we are being implicated. We are functioning well. Then where do you go from there if they say those two words? Then you don't go anywhere. But if everything is on the table, now we are able to channel your questions and your responses. That's my point of view. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, I think that certainly as a committee we would in fact failing in our responsibility if we will not say that we have interest to understand in what is happening around all these allegations. So we do have the responsibility to do that, to say that, and to make sure that we oversight and we engage with those kind of processes. But then we need to plan as when we're going to do it. At the moment, if I understand, if there is an inquest about this whole issue, we would probably not achieve what we want to achieve. So it means that we need to say, this is when we're going to do it, let's agree we're going to do it, but this is when we're going to do it. Let's await on this process, because we need to get information about some of these things and the allegation that has been made. On the slush fund issues and the rest, or what the allegations about money and Mdluli and the police, I think we made a statement during the discussion about where we stand on this matter, around that there should be investigation. We should get to the bottom of all these issues. Now, where we don't have capacity and authority is in terms of oversighting around the secrecy fund. It's a matter that has to be dealt with by another committee. But our interest in terms of the misdemeanors would be in respect to the police officials, once that sufficient information is provided, that we can then say, let's engage with this particular question. But I think as of now, the difficulty is that we will be prohibited by the process and legal process to engage in the process. I think that's the only problem I see for me. But I think the one part we must be yes part, we want to do it, but we must do it once we have all this information waiting for this process, particularly the process of the inquest. I hear what the other process of cabinet. We have no role in the cabinet process. We would engage with the our oversight responsibility as a committee, where the committee has a responsibility in terms of our rules.
Chairperson, where I should agree with Honorable Kolabana is the fact that the Mdluli saga has definitely caused a major problem and crisis in a way in the country. On that one, I'm sure we should all agree. But calling him in, I agree with the chairperson that would not be helpful, particularly in the light that there is an inquest that should be allowed to run its course. I still am of the opinion, chairperson, that the Minister of Police has to come to help put a number of things into perspective. To read in the media about infighting among the top generals is affecting the confidence of the public in the police. So we need to get clarity on that. Is it true it is happening, and what is being done to resolve that? Because the police, particularly top brass, need to work together to fight crime. So we need clarity on that. Is what we are reading true or not, and what's been done about that? There are also other statements about some cabinet ministers not being sure whether they can trust their bodyguards because of this saga. And only the minister can lay fears if they're there to say, this is not the case. Cabinet has looked into this matter. There is no cabinet minister who's distrusting his own bodyguard because of this, again, Mdluli saga. So I think what would help to bring this matter to rest is for the minister to come, and we ask him questions so that he would clarify issues that need to be clarified. The inquest into the Mdluli saga, let it be allowed to run its course. But these two issues I've raised about the infighting and also what is being said about cabinet ministers, I think the minister can give clarity, and I would support calling the minister to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I think we, as you correctly said, in terms of Mdluli and whether Mdluli should come before the committee, I think it's clear that cannot be done.
I also think that we...
If I could just repeat, I have never asked that Mdluli come. I didn't... if you read again, perhaps, I just read it. I have not at any stage asked that Richard Mdluli be asked to come here. There seems to be a thought that I did not. Thank you.
Chairperson, if I can continue. I think when, on the 17th of April, when all of us made statements regarding this issue, we all said that we want the issues to be investigated without fear or favour, and if any investigation indicates that anybody, whoever they are guilty of something, that they be brought to book. We've made that quite clear. You will remember that the Acting National Commissioner in responding also indicated that there are new allegations that they've learned about over the weekend and that they will surely be investigating that. He said that. And so at the appropriate time, I think the committee's got the right to ask the National Commissioner, Acting National Commissioner, on progress in terms of that regard. And Chairperson, it is this committee who does oversight over the executive. And if this committee feels there's a need to call the minister to clarify this issue, then so be it. But let us do it at the appropriate time. I think that's the point the Honourable George was trying to make as well. At what point in time do we call in then to do so? And I'm if I listen to what the committee members have been saying, different parties have been saying, we're all saying it is part of our normal parliamentary duties on the oversight of the executive, that we can call the minister, and if we need be, we call the minister in this regard. And I want to agree in terms of we determining the time when it should be done. And with that, I'm not saying let's wait till everything has played out in the media. That's not what I'm saying, because I think we will be irresponsible if we do that. We can't do that either. We need to be seen. It's up to us. We're representing the people. It's up to us to represent those people with the questions and to raise that the issues that we do have. I also agree, I can't remember whether it was the Honourable Ramatlakane or the Honourable Meshu make a point that we should prepare before we start such a meeting as ourselves to know what it is that we want and what it is that we want to achieve from such a meeting, knowing also that there are limitations in terms of what the minister will be able to respond to as well. Can I also refer, Chairperson, and remind you that the Auditor General himself is also busy with the investigation. So it's the Auditor General, it's the Inspectorate General, it is whoever else, it's the inquest, et cetera, et cetera. So there's quite a number of issues. So, Chairperson, in support of what you've been saying, when and if we should feel the need is there, and I get the feeling that that's the general feeling, that we call the minister, but that before we go into such a meeting, that as a committee we prepare ourselves as well. Certainly we should be doing that before we actually do call the minister.
And that is why we said we'll consider that, and we said even on Thursday we will definitely not, we don't think it's necessary to invite General Mdluli. I just want to read this section of the Subs Act. Section 36 of the Subs Act, discharge on account of sentence imposed. A member who is convicted of an offence is sentenced to a term and is sentenced to a term of imprisonment without the option of a fine, shall be deemed to have been discharged from the service with effect from the date following the date of such sentence, provided that if such term of imprisonment is wholly suspended, the member concerned shall not be deemed to have been so discharged. I'm just reading this. I read this because there are these questions to say suspended or not suspended, why did he come back, why this and that. I just decided that probably to go to the Sub-8. Two of the Sub-8 says, a person referred to in subsection 1, the section that I was reading, A, whose conviction is set aside following an appeal or review and is not replaced by a conviction for another offense, B, conviction is set aside on appeal or review but is replaced by a conviction for another offense
whether by the court of appeal or review or the court of first instance, and a sentence to a term of imprisonment without the option of a fine is not imposed upon him or her following on the conviction for such other offense, or sentence to a term of imprisonment without the option of a fine is set aside following an appeal or review and is replaced with a sentence other than a sentence to a term of imprisonment without the option of a fine, may, within a period of 30 days after his or her conviction has been set aside or his or her sentence has been replaced by a sentence other than a sentence to a term of imprisonment without the option of a fine, apply to the National Commissioner to be reinstated as a member. In the event of an application by a person whose conviction has been set aside as contemplated in subsection 2A, the National Commissioner shall reinstate such a person as a member with effect from the date upon which he or she is deemed to have been so discharged. In the event of any application by a person whose conviction has been set aside or whose sentence has been replaced as contemplated in subsection 2B and C, the National Commissioner may reinstate such a person as a member with effect from the date upon which he or she is deemed to have been so discharged, or cause an inquiry to be instituted in accordance within section 34 into the suitability of reinstating such a person as a member. For the purpose of this section, a sentence to imprisonment until the rising of the court shall not be deemed to be a sentence to imprisonment without the option of a fine. This section shall not be construed as precluding any administrative action, investigation, or inquiry in terms of any other provision of this Act with respect to the member concerned and any lawful decision or action taken in consequence thereof. I just want to also read section 43 because I found it quite interesting as well. No, yeah, 43. It is referring to suspension while in detention or imprisoned. Subject to section 36, the section I was reading, a member who is in detention or is serving a term of imprisonment shall not be deemed to be suspended from the service for the period during which he or she is so detained or is serving such term of imprisonment. A member referred to in subsection 1, the one I was reading, shall, unless the national or provincial commissioner otherwise directs, not be entitled for the applicable period to any salary, wages, allowance, privileges, or benefits to which he or she would otherwise be entitled as a member. Where a member is detained pending the outcome of criminal proceedings against him or her, and such member is subsequently found not guilty on all charges, or is convicted but such conviction is subsequently set aside, or serves a term of imprisonment which is subsequently set aside, such member may make representations to the national or provincial commissioner that any salary, wages, allowances, privileges, or benefits forfeited by him or her under subsection 2 be restored to him or her. The national or provincial commissioner may, in the circumstances contemplated in subsection 3, or after consideration by any representations received from a member, determine that any forfeited salary, wages, allowances, privileges, or benefits be restored to such a member. I'm just reading it. Section 36 and section 43. I wish members can also read this section because probably as I'm reading, some of the things you might not understand. But they are legislation. This one section, I wish we can read it. And probably see as to whether it applies to General Mzuli or it does not apply. And what would happen if after the NPA dropped the charges and said we're not prosecuting? What was the department expected to do under such circumstances in relation to these sections of the South African Police Service Act? I'm just asking the question. And thank you very much. We can go for tea.
We must invite
include, but can I just read the letter so that probably our members will understand where I come from? And we have concluded that we'll consider inviting the minister to come and brief the portfolio committee. And I think that is the conclusion. But the letter says, the ongoing saga regarding crime intelligence head Richard Mhuli must be subjected to proper parliamentary scrutiny. The ongoing saga regarding crime intelligence head Richard Mhuli must be subjected to proper parliamentary scrutiny. So it's the matter that is. But okay. This debacle has significant implications both for the credibility of the police and for national security, given Mhuli's high-ranking position in the intelligence services. I would accordingly like to formally request that special hearings take place on the Mhuli saga. The South African public has, for the better part of a year, been faced with continuous revelations of how the alleged conduct of Richard Mhuli has damaged a number of key state institutions. These include the SAPS, the Hawks, the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence, and the National Prosecuting Authority. The Police Portfolio Committee, in terms of the National Assembly Rule 201C, must monitor, investigate, and inquire into the functioning organization, structure, staff, and policies of the South African Police Service. It is therefore incumbent upon our committee to place the Mhuli matter on the committee's agenda as a matter of urgency and put it to a vote in the committee in terms of National Assembly Rule 2011. Too many questions remain unanswered for this matter to not be thoroughly examined by Parliament. The alleged involvement of both Police Minister Nathi Mthethwa and President Jacob Zuma is cause for particular concern. The Portfolio Committee must take this opportunity to display its commitment to holding the SAPS to account. It must exercise its power and ensure that the South African public receives a full explanation on the Mhuli saga. I look forward to your favorable response in this regard. There isn't anywhere in the letter where it suggests that we invite the minister and the acting national commissioner. And following that, there was a media statement that she made in person to say Mhuli must appear before the portfolio committee. And it is on the basis of that that the point of departure of the chairperson was that we will not do justice by inviting Honorable, General Mhuli. It is in that, and I've told Honorable Kolapanat. But also, if you read the letter, one thing that comes into your mind, coupled with what she might have said in the media, is that you invite General Mhuli. And in response to that, Chairperson said, I think it was in the news yesterday, that we may have to consider inviting the minister. I just want to put that on record. We indeed have done with this matter. We look forward to what happens going forward as the portfolio committee. We will inform the poll committee accordingly. I thought it's important that I read the letter to the portfolio committee. Thank you very much, and thank you for engaging. And can I request that in future we probably at least make the chairperson aware if we want to put a matter in the agenda of the portfolio committee. I think it was just out of respecting members of the portfolio committee that I thought probably let us deal with the matter. Otherwise, it would have been easy for me to say it's not in the agenda of today's meeting, we'll deal with it tomorrow. But it was just out of respecting the member who already had spoken on the matter that I, after saying that, I thought probably let's just deal with the matter. But I request that maybe in future we make the chairperson aware that we want to put this matter on the agenda of the portfolio committee and we put it so that it doesn't come as a surprise. Otherwise, it will be chaotic if we just bring matters when the committee is already sitting. Thank you very much. On that matter, we're proceeding with the work that we are doing. We are now on section 18. Babumzovu is very attentive, particularly after a hiding. Yeah. After some hiding, if you don't, you will. If you leave Mulek George and Honorable Ndlovu just to. You're most likely to have chaos. So somehow you've got to bring them under control. And now they are very disciplined. Jenny?
Chair, I'm going to ask
General Jacobs to take the committee through the last sections because they're quite technical changes related to the schedules of the interim constitution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, as has been pointed out that the Police Service Act itself will later on be reviewed. So the section that we deal with now, or the clause, actually is an amendment of the South African Police Service Act in order to bring it in line with the relevant sections of the present constitution, the 1996 constitution. So the proposal is that the words preceding paragraph A in the preamble of the act be amended to provide that whereas and section 214, that is of the 1993 constitution, that reference is deleted to say whereas the constitution of the Republic of South Africa 1996 requires national legislation to provide for the establishment, powers and functions to function in accordance with national policing policy and the directions of the cabinet member responsible for policing. That is how it should read after the amendment. What is taken out is and regulation, and also which shall be structured at both national and provincial levels and shall function under the direction of the national government as well as the various provincial governments. That part that has been deleted is from the old, the 1993 constitution. Madam Chair, there were a lot of references in the discussions to section 207, and indeed this amendment gives effect to both section 205 of the constitution relating to national legislation to provide for the powers and functions, as well as section 207, and specifically section 207(2) of the constitution, which relates to the directions of the cabinet member responsible for policing. Madam Chair, and then there's just a section to link up with the amendment above to insert whereas there's a need to provide a police service throughout the national territory to ensure the safety and security of all persons and property, etc. And then lastly, to insert a paragraph after paragraph E of the Constitution, the following, and whereas there's a need to provide for a directorate in the service that is dedicated to the prevention, investigation and combating of national priority offences, in particular serious organised and transnational crime, serious commercial crime and serious corruption, and that enjoys adequate independence to enable it to perform its functions. Also to give effect to the relevant constitutional court case. Madam Chair, Clause 19 is the repeal and amendment of laws, and it simply says that the laws mentioned in the schedule are repealed or amended to the extent set out in the third column. And I think we can just after this go to the amendment. I'll just go through Section 20 as well. This act shall be called the South African Police Service Amendment Act 2012 and comes into operation on a date determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. And Madam Chair, if you would allow me, I will do the amendment in the schedule as well because it's actually very short. Madam Chair, the first amendment is a deletion to a schedule in the present constitution. It's a repeal of item 1C of Annexure D of Schedule 6 to the Constitution. Madam Chair, if we look at that item 1C, it refers to the power of the National Commissioner regarding the investigation and prevention of organized crime or crime which requires national investigation and prevention of specialized skills. Madam Chair, if this section would have been left in the interim constitution in the annexure thereto, it could have caused a conflict with the present bill before the committee. Because in terms of the present bill, the issues of organized crime and crime which requires national investigation, that specifically relates to Section 16 of the Police Service Act. That would have caused a conflict, so the amendment is then to the Constitution just to the Annexure D to delete that paragraph D to avoid that type of conflict. Madam Chair, the next is an amendment to the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. At present, Madam Chair, Section 34 provides that the National Commissioner may publish a notice in terms of which the procedure for the notification or information regarding corruption can be reported. Now, what this amendment does is to give that power to the head of the directorate. And I can say that presently I think this amendment actually confirms what is happening in practice. At the moment, whenever corruption is being reported to the South African Police Service in terms of Section 34, it is being reported to the commercial crime component, which is part of the DPCI. So, in effect, this gives effect to what is happening at the moment, and you will see that the only difference with the present section is that the police official in the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation referred to in Section 17C of the South African Police Service Act. That is where the reporting must take place, and that specifically relates to the head of the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, as the National Commissioner is deleted from that section. So, Madam Chair, without going through the whole wording of that, the only effect of this is that whereas the National Commissioner can, by notice in the Gazette, determine where corruption must be reported, the head of the directorate can now determine that procedure. And I think that links up with the whole issue of the selection of cases, whereas all these reports will go wherever the head of the directorate determine that, and from that will then be selected the cases that will actually be investigated, and the other corruption cases will then, of course, be diffused to other units that can possibly investigate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, members. Section 18, Section 19, Section 20, as well as schedules. Members, do you want to suggest amendments? Honorable, no honorable. Honorable Ramatlakane.
Madam Chair, I just want to understand the amendment on 18. I know the explanation is that the current SEPS Act has to be, this Act must be brought in line, and therefore you have to amend the other one. I just want to ask, just for my clarity's sake, isn't it a process currently of the amendment of the Accept Act already that is in place, in progress? I'm just trying to understand the two connection. When is that process going to be completed? Because it sounds to me like it's a on your feet type of amendment. Instead of the holistic things like on your feet. Now, I don't know the legal constitutional issue that may be come to effect if this amendment is left unamended. Otherwise, the Police Act as it stands. So I just want to understand the rationale of the proposal or suggested amendment in it. And then the second one, I just want to understand, Chair, is the 1996, the schedule issue, the repeal of item 1C of the annexure D of the schedule of the Constitution. That you're suggesting that it should be repealed. I'm just trying to understand the both rationale. I think that my challenge, being a lay person, is this gradual the issue about the constitutional issue without looking at the whole holistic, the act in holistic in totality. I have a challenge of the doability
of what we are suggesting to do in terms of the Constitution using the Act. Maybe you'll help me, and the state law advisor should help us to understand this.
My question is not related to this. I think it's unfortunately one of the challenges that this committee has to deal with every time it deals with legislation. When we dealt with the Firearms Act, it was the same thing. You had to amend certain sections to bring it in line with the final constitution. And hopefully we will get the legislation so that for once and all we can have a proper SAPS Act that deals, that is in line with the final constitution. But my concern here is, and I'm just raising it, is that I would request, Chairperson, that the legal team together with the state law advisors go through all these amendments that they're now saying in the schedules and of the acts that needs to be changed to ensure that we cover every single one of them. It would be a massive gemors if we pass this and we suddenly realize that we haven't covered all of them. So I'm just requesting that they go through with a fine comb again and just confirm with us when we meet again that it is all of them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think to link on to what Mr. Annelies van Dyk said is that there's a process that the SAPS Act must be amended. Now, if you look at Section 218 of the Interim Constitution, it gives a whole list of issues that the National Commission is responsible for. Like, for example, the Forensic Science Laboratory, a lot of other functions. Now, we cannot repeal the whole of Section 218 at this stage because of this review that's ongoing now. But what we tried to do here was to eliminate possible conflicts between that paragraph, specific paragraph D, and the legislation we are dealing with at the moment, to ensure that whereas the interim constitution says that the national commissioner is responsible for the investigation and prevention of organized crime or crime which require national investigation, to make sure that if we say it is now the head of the directorate who will perform that function, that it's not in conflict with the interim constitution. And we have been advised that it can be the annexes to the constitution can be amended through normal legislation. And I think that's basically it, Madam Chair. I appreciate the problem with the SAPS Act that's not being reviewed in total. But to really go and simply repeal Section 218 or try to do that type of patching up, I think will be very problematic. Whereas it's just this, and I believe from the state law advisors, there might be another, just a single paragraph in that Section 218 that we might need to look at specifically what the Honourable Member Van Dyk has said, that we must make sure that we cover all that type of issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair, if I can remind the committee, the Honourable George specifically should remember that vividly, since he was the guilty party. Sorry, the chairperson at that stage. Is that when, for instance, with the Firearms Amendment Act, we had to do something similar to give control of the Central Firearm Register to the Central Firearm Officer in control. That was, if I remember correctly, is an example of where we had to do it previously as well. So it's not a new thing, it's not a nice thing, but we can again blame the Honourable Moduleki for the fact that we don't have a act that deals with the new constitution, because it was during his time that the Secretariat of Police and the National Management of Police came to a meeting fighting instead of giving us a new act.
Honourable Judge, do you want to respond? No, thank you very much. It would seem like Honourable Ramatlakane, do you want to?
I appreciate the response and the difficulties, because I wanted to know whether it's doable. So you're saying you have been advised that it's indeed doable, because I did not read the the 1993 constitution outside of the 1996 constitution in terms of the function and responsibility, because 1993 is not a different constitution to 1996. There was a seamless intertwine in the process of finalization. But I can rest with what the assurance that has been provided in terms of the ability of it.
Thank you very much. Thank you, members. It would seem like that is the last aspect of what we are here for. Huh? Oh,
can I suggest that we deal with the amendments before the memorandum of objectives? Because some of the amendments that the committee have made may change the they may change the memorandum of objectives slightly, so that we bring that back once we've made the changes. Or do you want us to go through it now?
I hear what the secretary is saying, but there's already amendments that we want to propose in terms of the memorandum. And you've ruled this morning that we're going to finish the bill before we start dealing with amendments again. So can we maybe just deal with the memorandum so that we can present those? And I agree with you, there is definitely going to be subsequent changes that would come to the memorandum that we have not picked up on yet. And that can be the homework of the legal team and the state law advisor.
I'm completely now silenced by this intervention of Honorable Annelies, because I had wanted to look at consequential amendment on the section that deal with the PMFA issue, which was not quite picked up when I was just perusing this. Maybe we'll have to come back to that at the second part.
No, we said we'll cover everything, and then after that we go back to everything else that we have spoken about, everything else that we have flagged, and so on and so forth. So let's move on like that.
Chair, can I suggest that we don't go through bit by bit the memorandum of objectives, because they're completely new memorandum of objectives. One would hope that people have read them. So then it's not like we're amending the old memorandum of objectives, so that what we take now from members of the portfolio committee is any amendments that they have picked up in this. Otherwise, I'd need to read through the entire memorandum of objectives. So if I could just have your direction on that, Chair. And then what we would have to do is take amendments that people may want to raise now and then look at consequential amendments, if that's possible. Otherwise, I must read through the entire memorandum of objectives, Chair.
A consequential amendment that we think should happen, and the you've got add clause 8, 2.8, and then you've got where there is loss of confidence in. Now, we've rewritten the whole issue of the removal of the head of the DPCI, and therefore we think this should be amended to reflect that. I'm going to propose an amendment, not suggesting in any way that the wording is correct, but just a proposal. Instead of, we say where there is, then remove loss of confidence in and replace with the following: misconduct, continued ill health, incapacity to carry out his or her duties of office efficiently, or on account that he or she is no longer a fit and proper person to hold the office concerned, the head of the directorate, as head of the directorate, he or she may not be suspended or removed by the minister from office unless certain procedures are followed. Must I repeat that again? Where there is, then we remove loss of confidence, because we've done that in the body of the bill as well. Misconduct, continued ill health, incapacity to carry out his or her duties of office efficiently, or on account that he or she is no longer a fit and proper person to hold the office concerned as the head of the directorate, he or she may not be suspended or removed by the minister from office unless certain procedures are followed. We can even say unless procedures as prescribed in the Act are followed. Need to rule me out of order if you want us to do it when we come back with a cleaner bill. But there is an amendment that the ANC wanted to propose but actually left behind. I don't know whether you want us to propose that amendment now so that it can be included if the committee agrees on it, or whether we should wait till we come back with a cleaner version. Chairperson, it is after 17C. It's around the management. 17C it's about administrative. It's just after 17. This numbering for me is so confusing. 17CE, if that makes any sense to anybody. So reads administrative staff appointed to the directorate and administrative staff appointed to the directorate. That's E, how it reads. Then we want to include a new section, Chairperson, there, after that, to say the head of the directorate shall have direct management and control over all members of the directorate, including officers and members in the provinces. The head of the directorate shall have direct management and control over all members of the directorate, including over officers and members of the directorate in the provinces. Got it. Yeah, 17CE reads, administrative staff appointed to the directorate. It's an inclusion. Then we say an S be added to say the head of the directorate shall have direct management and control over all members of the directorate, including over officers and members of the directorate in the provinces. It's just to ensure that it is clear that even the provincial DPCI falls under the national head of the directorate.
Thank you. Members. No, there are flat issues which we're going to now. If there is no other amendment in the bill itself, I mean, in the schedule that we've been dealing with, there's nothing. Members, I think we can discuss some of the issues and see as to how far we go. One issue I have here, which I think we said we'll flag, will include the location of the DPCI. There was an issue regarding the appointment of the DPCI by the minister, who determines which crimes must be investigated by the Hawks. Probably we've answered some of the questions as we proceed. I think we've discussed this on the transitional budget for the retired judge. I think we said they've got to do some homework on that one. I think also one other issue was with regards to the Deputy National Commissioner.
No, we remember we were saying that 65%, I think it's with regards to that 65% salary and so on, if I'm not mistaken. But also it was said it would have to be flat. These are the issues that I have, and that's you add others.
A procedural issue, if I may. Is it not going to make more sense for us to have a clean-up bill in front of us when we start discussing the flagged issues? Because some of these issues we flagged before we addressed, like you said, we've addressed the appointment, etc. Is it not going to make more sense for us just to have a clean-up bill in front of us so that we can discuss the clean the flagged issues in the new environment? Because it's not, the bill itself looks dramatically different. I'm just worried that we're going to get ourselves in a situation where we start reopening issues that we then find we have already addressed. I'm not saying we shouldn't be discussing them. In fact, we should be discussing them. But I'm just asking whether it won't be more sensible to have a cleaner bill before we do that.
We, for instance, said the location of the hawks. And for us to now agree that this is a clean bill, it must be because it is located, and we have agreed that we're locating it somewhere. Which thing I think we can do, because some members already indicated that they might not have a problem with the hawks being located wherever it stops. But I think it's something that we can easily do, so that as this matter is, we are able. I think it's something that we can. We might not decide on it, but I think we can discuss it. Another bullet call upon it.
Chair, I've just I've had another brief come in from someone overseas who's taken a great interest in this, and she looked at all of the inputs made during the public hearings, and her belief is that we're going to come across a problem again with the Constitutional Court. In that, she says it's not up to Parliament and the Executive to decide where the unit should be located. The Constitution already regulates that in Section 179(2), 4 and 5. The investigation and prosecution of corruption is a function of the NPA, which cannot be transferred to another branch of state power by other state organs, such as Parliament and the Executive. So, okay, she says Section 179, and then in brackets 2, and then comma 4 and 5. So the interpretation there as I must again mention that the other presentations all referred to this need to move it out from under the SAT. So we've progressed on the bill because it was drawn up as such prior to this discussion, as a SAPS bill and an amendment to the SAPS Act. And we've not at any stage investigated this possibility, and as I say, the litmus test will be when it goes before the Constitutional Court. That will be the test of whether it comes back here or not. And it's being pointed out by a number of people that this is an issue, and I think that we actually should be interrogating it very seriously.
That's it, listen. I'm sitting with the Constitution in front of me. 179, 2, 4, and 5. The first 179, subsection 2, Subsection 4 and Subsection 5. Subsection 2 reads, the prosecuting authority has the power to institute criminal proceedings, not to investigate, on behalf of the state, and to carry out necessary functions incidental to instituting criminal proceedings. 4 says, national legislation must ensure that the prosecuting authority exercises its functions without fear or favor of prejudice. It's no way linking it to corruption specifically. Issues and it's also again referring to the prosecuting part of it. 5, the National Director of Prosecutions must determine with the concurrence of Cabinet member responsible for the administration of justice and after consulting the Director of Public Prosecutions, prosecution policy, which must be observed in the prosecution process. B, must issue policy directives which must be observed in the prosecution process. It nowhere is referred to investigation. We are dealing with investigation. So I would humbly say that I think the reference to these sections of the Constitution might not be the correct references because it deals with prosecution and not with investigation. And I think also it's important for ourselves to remind ourselves about the constitutional obligation of a differentiation between investigation and prosecution. The judge and jury can't be the same people.
Honorable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I must repeat what I said. Sorry. I think to us, it's more the question of the location. It's not that we are interested this thing to be located here or there. I think the biggest test for this thing is that I'm reading in that background of the memorandum, the court concluded that the Constitution indeed imposes an obligation of the state to establish and maintain an independent body to combat corruption and organized crime. So the most important thing to us is the independence of this body. Also, what has been worried me is in our discussion, we seem to lay an emphasis on combating corruption. But also, what I'm trying to say now is that if you look at some of the things which we said about this location to the police, it does to me not give me the satisfaction. I'm not talking political pressure or what, because this thing does not say political pressure. It talks about independent body. That it does not to me give me that confidence that if it is under the police, it's going to be as independent. You see, also it does not have its own budget. There's a consequence of it. That whether the operational and structural attributes required for an adequately independent anti-corruption unit. That's what the court says. And that's why you are sitting here today. It also says there must be security of tenure and remuneration. The accountability and oversight by the ministerial committee. So we've done that by the way. But what I'm saying, I think when you look at this thing, we must look at have we met these requirements. To me, that is important. And if we have not met these requirements, I foresee that 12 months down the line, we'll be back here. So to me, that is what is critical. I think if we can examine objectively do we believe that with all that we have been doing here, we've set up a structure that of an independent body to combat corruption and organized crime, a body that has got operational and structural requirements required for an adequately independent body? I think those are the questions we must ask ourselves. Some of the things which we said are not really convincing. We say this body must be within the police service. We say it must be rank, not using the word so that not below the Deputy National Commissioner. You see, already, you see, once you talk ranks, whether you already there is an element of subordination there. It's, well, you might argue that subordination doesn't necessarily mean dependent. And I must say, I mean, there were other areas we should deal with here today, which again indicate that if this thing is under the police, there is no way you can say with confidence that it's going to be independent. Of course, there might be an argument that we did, because I'm sure that's an argument that's going to be thrown in. When we talk independence, we don't talk absolute independence. I agree with that notion. But surely, I believe, I still, of course, want to be, what is this, what do we benefit from putting this thing under the police? Is there any other reason, except those that were given here? Why are we so adamant that this thing must be in the police? Is there no other, have we examined other scenarios now? Of course, we've been looking at the bill as presented to us. But is it not time now to look at other scenarios? Well, I'm not sure, for instance, I wouldn't like to say chapter 9, but for instance, I don't know whether how possible it is to set a structure that is outside the police, completely outside the police. You see, also the reference to DSO. We're not bound to follow the route of DSO. Assuming we're to take this thing to justice, we might also change how the DSO was placed under justice. Instead of this structure, assuming we put it under justice, it accounting to the DG, accounting it directly to Parliament. Because to me, that is what, I mean, if you look at all the witnesses, because the DSO, I'll be the last person to argue that the DSO was a perfect. There were a lot of witnesses. That's why I'm saying, can we not look for a means, examine them, and then if we can't find any, say this is the only route, the best of the West, then we take it. But I don't get the feeling that we have examined other alternatives. I think we just rushing ourselves to put this thing under the police.
Jefferson, I do understand why you want us to talk about the relocation. But I want to go back to my debate, to my first proposal when we started looking at this bill. I said, Chairperson, that let us look at this thing in front of us. When we have already looked at it, and then we must ask ourselves on three questions. This is the question that we are raising now, Chairperson. My problem, Chairperson, is that our debate at this moment in time will be abstract, because it seems as if there are things that we have already done in this bill which can be either for or against of what we are dealing with. Are we therefore request, I don't know how we are going to do it, how we are going to roll it, but I will also request that we look at it, this thing, after the new born baby has already been in front of us. And Jefferson, will you?
I'm not talking about the what? Please, Chairperson. I was taking the line which says that can we look at what we have done and then ask the question, have we done enough in responding to these questions that we have flagged? And secondly, there are issues that we have to deal with after we have looked at this new thing that we have done, come up with. Because to me, it's not the same bill that is in front of us. I think we will be debating in circles, if my mind is correct, because we will be saying, instead of putting is there, we were supposed to put at. But maybe the document that will come tomorrow, or let's say in the afternoon, it's got at, but we are already debating. We're supposed to put something else somewhere. That's where my problem lies. That is why I'm saying maybe I really want to debate the location, but my feeling is very, very awkward to debate the location when I haven't got the bill in front of me to answer the question, that because there are only three questions that have been asked by the Constitutional Court: adequate, independence, relocation, and accountability. I'm putting my relocation as in a broad sense, because I want to talk about it in a manner that when we talk about accountability and so on, which we have dealt with and so on, it makes it easy for us to understand exactly what we are talking about. I hope I'm understood where I'm coming from, because I said this when we started this thing. Thanks, Chair.
That's true. Mr. Lefeto, the Constitution said structure and form, not the relocation. It rules on the location to say nothing unconstitutional. All that the Constitutional said was that we look into the structure and form, that is the operation and the structure of this, which must indicate some adequate independence. That's what the Constitutional Court said.
Chairperson.
But I'm done with Honorable
Ndlovu.
Honorable
Lefeto,
and then Honorable
Anelis. Thank you, Chair. I've been listening very attentively to Honorable Baba Ndlovu, and I think I agree with him that we first clean up the product of today, and then when we come back, I think we'll definitely, the changes are huge, and they are not just changes, they are quite huge. And as we go through the, then we will see, I agree that we must suspend for now all these flagged issues, then talk later. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, yes, it's Mr. George, we have people that we can caucus with. If you don't, that's really not my problem. The fact of the matter is, if you look at the Honourable George's concerns that he raised, and that's exactly why I suggested that we look at the cleaner bill, because Mr. George keeps on raising issues that we've dealt with. For instance, and I've got a checklist that I've put next to myself as we go along with the bill to see what is it that the Constitutional Court required of us to check those. Talks about structural and operational, adequate structural and operational independence. We've addressed it, and I can name examples of where we've addressed it. I don't know whether that's the time for that debate now. Mr. George keeps on talking about the rank. we've explained, and the change when he sees it in front of him will clearly indicate to him that the rank is in terms of salary. It's in terms of this person who's going to be appointed for 7 years, that person cannot be appointed lower than the position of the most senior deputy national commissioner's salary. We could just as well have said, we can change that wording to say the most senior deputy director general within the department. And then we don't refer to such ranks, but we still refer to state ranks. There's always going to be a rank of some sort involved. Budget is one of the issues that Mr. George raised. We said earmark budget. We went as far as saying that the head of the DPCI, national head of the DPCI, must submit, work out his budget, submit that to the national commissioner, that the head of the DPCI will be the person who makes his presentations when they go to Treasury. We put in the bill that the head of the DPCI will make his presentation to this portfolio committee when it's budget time, in terms of motivating for that money. We've increased the head of the DPCI's responsibility in terms of, and that goes to, speaks to security of tenure. We said head, provincial head, 7 years. We have talked about the fact that no staff member can be moved out of the directorate, whether it is for disciplinary or just simple transfers, without the head of the directorate. We said that the head of the directorate are now responsible for the management and control of the national body and the provincial bodies. We said we increased the role of parliament. We put in criteria for the appointment. The minister can no longer just appoint a person. We've put in criteria on how that person should look, what type of person is it that parliament wants him to appoint. That appointment must come to parliament. We set parliament's oversight role. We've extended that, I think, dramatically by saying that even the ministerial committee can be requested to report to parliament on its meetings. We said that parliament will receive the budget, but also the annual report, which would be drafted and submitted by the head of the unit as part of the sub-annual report as a new program. Chairperson, we have given the determination of cases after policy guidelines have been determined, submitted to Parliament, and Parliament must agree on those policy guidelines. Parliament, with other words, agreeing means Parliament can change it if it doesn't agree. We said after that it will be the head of the unit, not the minister, not the commissioner, nobody else. It will be the head of the unit that will determine the cases going to the unit. So in my mind, we've ticked the boxes. We've ticked every single one of those boxes. And that's I think, we can get a clear picture of when we have the clean bill in front of us. We can still have input once we have the cleaner bill, and somebody might suggest, let's look at a different name or whatever the case may be that will further strengthen this perceived independence. We can do all of that. But if you look at the bill, Chairperson, and I'm talking about the committee bill now, I'm not talking about the submitted bill, I'm talking about the committee bill, because I think the changes have been to such an extent significant enough for it to be called a committee bill. Then it's clear that the committee has applied its mind to those issues that the Constitutional Court required of it to do. And for that reason, I would support the Honourable Ndlovu as well, that let's get the cleaner bill so that we can all apply and sooner rather than later. We're not having a meeting again before Thursday. So if possible, let us have that cleaner bill tomorrow even, so that we can apply our minds and forget about the introduced bill, but apply our minds on the committee bill. And then Mr. George can go through the committee bill and still come back to us and say, no, I want this to be changed, then I'll be happy, and then we can consider it. But at this stage, maybe it's just Mr. George doing it. It's taking us back to what was introduced, not to the changes that we have made. And I think that's the challenge we have, Chair.
Honorable Kolapanat.
Chair, I know that this bill and certain changes have been made, and we're at a certain stage. But it's not, to my mind, about the position of the Hawks. Or the Hawks could be anywhere. It's about the independence of the Hawks in relation to pressures from superiors, pressures from politicians, influence, and the ranked structure of the SAPs. So the head is still appointed by a single politician. The chief accounting officer is still the National Police Commissioner. As a deputy commissioner, he or she is subservient in terms of the SAPs ranked structure to any senior officer. And there's a ministerial bill still on the committee is still here, even though the gravest reservations were expressed in the judgment about that. There are these issues that I believe will mitigate against us when it goes back to the Constitutional Court. I don't, and I know that attempts are being made here, but I don't personally believe in any way, shape, or form this can be said to be an independent unit. It's just not going to pass constitutional muster.
Chipperson, may I plead, Chipperson? I'm pleading for the last time now. Chipperson, it is very difficult for me to discuss about the subject that you want us to discuss about without having a clean bill in front of us. Why I'm saying that, Chatterson, it's because some of the things that we think they are not there. If we see the new bill, maybe it will console us, maybe it won't console us. That is why, Chairperson, you ask these questions. And that is why, Chairperson, we give you a leeway to hold us here till 3 a.m. the next day to make sure that we agree or disagree. But let us look at what we have in front of us. Because at this moment in time, we are chopping and changing. We are jumping from this side to this side. Where it suits us. We are politicians, I know that. And we are paid for it, 24 hours. But let us not use that at this time. Let us make sure that we have something in front of us. And then we say, take that A, remove it from there, and put it there. Take that C and put it there. Then it would look like better off. Okay, let's talk politics now when the C is there and the A is there. Then let's talk politics. And then we'll talk politics. Already we have removed the A and B and C. Now we know exactly what we're talking about. We are all, although not well educated, we all can read and write. Then we will see exactly of what we want to achieve at the end of the day. Then we will take a position from there. It is quite easy for us to say, now you want, you have the right. You want us to take a position in a manner of saying, we think this should look like this. We don't want to use the word, it should look like this. It must look like this. That's my proposal, Chairperson. That's my request.
Thank you, Honorable Ndlovu. Thank you, members. We will allow the state law advisors, the secretariat, as well as the lawyer, the department to clean the bill for us. Clean it as this is located within SAPS, because this is what we have right now. And then submit that to us at least by tomorrow so that we can then meet on Thursday. On Thursday, we will meet at 2, and the venue will be communicated to members. We also accept that our legal system requires some level of executive involvement in any area of executive functioning. This is the ruling of the court. It acknowledges that we can't have in South Africa. It will be difficult to have something, whether you take it to death, to NPA or whatever, there will be an executive somehow. Yes. So they will always be there. That is what the ruling is saying. So we take note of that. We will therefore request members that they go through the bill. We already have made some correction. In fact, amendments, they are quite huge.
So we please just request that the department, when they give us the bill, psycho advisors department, when they give us the cleanup bill, put the date on, because we've got now so many of them that it's really becoming confusing. Just give us a date, the latest date.
That is it. And we're requesting that you work together, all of you, the state law advisors and everybody, so that when we get this bill, we know it's been through that team, and so that we do not start correcting the legal language and so on and so forth. Thank you very much, members. We have debate tomorrow. If we can get the bill tomorrow morning, or say before the debate, then we can be very happier.
I want to repeat this question, because the secretary now answers this question. I want to put this question to the lawyers. Because the fact of the matter is, the point that Mr. Ndlovu is making, if we've got a cleanup bill, we need to have a clean bill. And none of us, if we are honest enough, is going to focus on it tomorrow morning. We're focusing on our speeches and on the debate. So if we can get it in envelopes as we go to the debate and give them that bit of more time to actually make sure they give us a bill, that they're not going to come to us and say, we forgot this section and this still needs to be changed or something like that. Please, Jay.
For sure. We're expecting exactly this, that all the amendments that have been made will be in that bill, correctly placed, and if possible, even the numbering, you know, the numbering itself, so that it is correct. We'll be happy to get that, and we'll take it from there. Members, there is lunch provided for us. We will meet on Thursday. The venue is V454. We'll meet at 2 o'clock on Thursday. We can work until late, and then again we'll proceed on Friday. The possibility is that we will adopt this bill next week, on Wednesday. Can I also say that our next week meeting is not on Tuesday, it is on Wednesday. Our meeting next week is not on Tuesday, it is on Wednesday. That is the 16th. Instead of the 15th, our meeting is on the 16th, on Wednesday, for the bill. It's not confirmed, but I think it might be during the week of the 22nd. That week, but it won't be the next week. Okay. Thank you very much.
Nothing different. Yeah. There's a feeling about what should be done, but I don't recall any concrete language.